DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I think if you've listened to this show for a long time, one of the things you know is I am a college football obsessive, not just Georgia, but just the sport in general. I love this time of year. I love being able to focus in on all the things that are going to happen on Fall Saturdays. And so with that in mind, I have to admit that I don't like what I have to say sort of off the top of the program here today. I guess I sort of find myself a bit sort of in the need to sort of manufacture some excitement about this week's game against Middle Tennessee State. I mean, first of all, you know, it's kind of funny. If you didn't know anything about college football, but you knew these teams sort of play directional schools, you would think that Middle Tennessee State is sort of the worst of them all because it's the most sort of non-specific direction, just middle. Not north, not south, not east, just the middle of Tennessee, and it's like Middle Tennessee State. There's generally sort of an inverse relationship between how good a team is and the number of syllables that it has in its name. Middle Tennessee State's kind of a mouthful here. That's generally not pretty good. Although the Blue Raiders, I believe they are, they've actually been okay. They beat Missouri a couple years ago, beat somebody of note last year. Maybe it was Minnesota. I can't remember, but they had a Power 5 wins. So this is not a terrible team necessarily, but a week after Georgia goes to Williams-Brice Stadium, takes on at least something of a, you know, a middle-tier rivalry for the program, the step down in competition for week 3 here is a little disappointing, and through 3 weeks to have played two sort of non-Power 5 and in the case of Austin Peay, an FCS opponent, there is something about that that's sort of lacking here a bit this week. So I'm going to do my part to try to change that. As I said, I'm going to try to kind of, you know, manufacture some excitement about the game. And from that, to help us out is Middle Tennessee State coach Rick Stockstill, who has been there for a while, done a pretty good job with that program. And he actually gave Georgia fans kind of a nice compliment here when he met with the media for his weekly press conference. He was talking about, you know, kind of what he wants to see from his team. And he sort of goes into the way they're going to respond to playing at Sanford Stadium. Now, listen to this very closely here. Listen to the reasons why Stockstill thinks that the excitement and the energy of Sanford Stadium is going to be even higher for his team to combat than it was a couple of years ago when they went to Alabama. I think you'll like this if you're a Georgia fan. Here is Rick Stockstill, the Middle Tennessee State coach.
We're playing a lot of new people. You know that the moment is not too big for them, that they don't get deer in the headlight looks going down there and playing. You know, we've gone to Alabama and played, but going down to Athens at a night game, they hadn't been in an atmosphere like this yet because it's going to be rowdy. It'll be loud. It'll be extremely loud. It'll be energetic. You know, they'll have had all day to get primed. Their fans, they'll be ready to go.
There is something about the phrase "they'll have all day to get primed" that I just sort of think is funny, but there's a lot to sort of unpack there from Stockstill. First of all, how about the fact that he says, "Hey, listen, we played it at Alabama Bryant-Denny Stadium. That was okay, but this is Sanford Stadium at night. This is Georgia in front of a rowdy nighttime crowd." I mean, if you're a Georgia fan, that kind of feels pretty good to hear that, right? Kind of feels kind of nice to hear Georgia's crowd sort of praised in comparison to the Alabama crowd there. And listen, for those of us who've been around for a while and doing this for a long time, we can sort of think back to not all that long ago where it seemed like Georgia getting some night home games was almost an impossibility. The kind of thing that, for whatever reason, either Georgia didn't seem to want or the television networks just didn't think Georgia was good enough to deserve. You didn't get a lot of these nighttime home games. You got one on Saturday against Middle Tennessee State. Yes, it's not exactly the opponent you want to play, more on that in a moment, but it is a chance for, I think, Georgia fans to kind of go out here and sort of make Rick Stockstill's prediction turn out to be right, that it was a rowdy crowd, it was an intense environment, and it was the kind of thing that made things really hard on not just Middle Tennessee State, but any opponent that Georgia could have played there that night. That's what Georgia did. I mean, after all, I think we are in kind of a time now in which the Georgia fan base reputation has really grown here over, I would say, the last year. Now, Georgia fans have always been sort of thought to be a passionate lot. But with the way this team took over Notre Dame almost exactly a year ago, traveled in throngs of tens upon tens of thousands into the Rose Bowl for the college football playoff, and sort of everything in between, where it's almost become like one of the hallmarks of the Georgia program to sort of empty out these opposing stadiums. Did it last week against South Carolina, did it last year to Tennessee, did it last year at least to half the stadium there in Jacksonville. This is a fan base that's developed a pretty good reputation for itself, and I think the final frontier in that regard is to really make Sanford Stadium, you know, right there alongside any other building in the South in terms of it is really hard to go in there and play. You want to hear opposing coaches say what Rick Stockstill said there. And I think the Georgia fans, even if the game this upcoming Saturday is not exactly the most exciting game, I think the fans have a job to do, which is to still be excited, because it'll obviously sway the recruits who are in attendance there for that. More on that with Jeff Sintel later on this week. And it'll just sort of cement that reputation that when it comes to rabid, crazy college football fans, Georgia doesn't take a backseat to anybody else in this part of the country when it comes to that. Now, with all that said, Kirby Smart also had something kind of interesting to say yesterday. And listen, I may be reading too much into this. At times, I'm probably guilty of that here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. But on the subject of playing Middle Tennessee State, you know, Rick Stockstill says, oh, it's going to be tough for us. Our players have not seen a stadium like this at night. Well, Georgia, unfortunately, has seen a number of programs similar to Middle Tennessee State as of late over the last few years, much the same way all college football programs kind of have. And you sort of get the impression that Kirby Smart's getting a little tired of these games. I mean, he sees a good reason to play them, don't get me wrong, but this is about as lukewarm as I've heard Kirby on the subject of playing sort of a non-Power 5 opponent. Listen to this clip from Kirby and see if you come away with the same take on this that I do. Here is the coach.
Games like these a lot of times are an opportunity for their programs to survive and stay alive. And financially, they're important to some of these programs. So I have mixed emotions about it when it comes to that, because I think when you look at the NFL and week in and week out, playing the caliber of opponents they're forced to play, it forces parity on more people. And I've said before, I've been in favor of whether it's a 9-game SEC schedule. It doesn't matter to me. It's not something that we shy away from. I think it's good for the fan base to have the better games or the home and homes. I think those things are good for college football, but you have to look at it through two people's perspective. And sometimes these programs wouldn't survive, and I'm a big advocate for football in general, and I think that they need these games to survive financially. And without them, some of these programs may not be able to survive.
So I think there are two distinct lines of thought in what Kirby says there. On the one hand, he says he's an advocate for football. Of course he is. His dad was a high school coach. Every friend he has is also a coach. Most of their dads were also high school coaches. This is a guy that sort of came up and was brought up in the game of football. So obviously, you know, he wants to be a supporter of all programs. I get that. And yet, parallel to that is the issue facing Georgia, which is it's just sort of better for the program now to be playing bigger games. And from that standpoint, I sort of take it as somewhat, I don't want to say newsy necessarily, but another example of the evolution that's taking place in terms of, I just think that these kinds of games are quickly growing out of style. Fans don't come to them as much anymore. There's an attendance problem all around college football. I don't think it's impacted Georgia quite as much yet, but there is a pretty significant attendance issue in some places in college football. The lack of compelling games is sort of one of the reasons why there. It's worth pointing out that it's sort of good business to play these games. You can write a check for a team to come into Sanford Stadium. You make more money on the gate and all the other various issues there than you do for what you have to pay out. But nonetheless, the overall bottom line for college football may be hurt when Georgia's playing an opponent that's, on paper at least, so inferior. So I think you can kind of put Kirby Smart here in the category of Gus Malzahn and Nick Saban, who've recently said, hey, the SEC ought to be playing a 9-game conference schedule. And just the same way that Georgia has, you know, scheduled its home and home with Notre Dame, it'll get the return trip on that again next year. Got the game with Clemson coming up. Alabama's playing Notre Dame. Alabama's playing Texas. I think we're seeing some momentum here towards better games, both in the conference realm, maybe a 9-game slate, and the non-conference realm in the years to come. I think the coaches are sort of on board with this. We know the fans are on board with this. I think the coaches are kind of on board with this, too. But that's obviously for the future. For now, we have what we have, which is Middle Tennessee State coming up on Saturday night. It may not be the game that Georgia fans want it to be. It may not be the opponent Georgia fans would rather see the Bulldogs play. But it's one of the few times for an entire year you get a chance to be in Sanford Stadium. So on Saturday night, my hope is that Georgia fans will make Rick Stockstill, the Middle Tennessee State coach, look prophetic. That it really was a rowdy crowd. It really was as loud as he worried about it might be. And it's really, really tough on the Blue Raiders there that night as Georgia fans continue to cement their reputation as one of the top fan bases in all of college football. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. And glad to have you with us, whether you watch us on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook page, YouTube page, the Dog Nation Twitter feed. Yes, we're on Twitter as well on video. You can check that out if you're ever so inclined there on the Twitter world. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcast player there for the Android folks, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud, everything in between. We're just really, really glad to have found Dog Nation Daily here today. We'll have Jeff Sintel coming up in just a moment on that. We will also get ready for our Around the Doghouse coming up in a moment, but let me say thanks to Marco's Pizza before we get there. And, of course, a lot of you watching Monday Night Football last night or watching Braves throughout the week, especially if you're staying up late with the Braves out in San Francisco, you're settling in, getting some Marco's Pizza, and you can do that with a special offer. Say hello, Primo, right now by going to Marco's.com and taking advantage of two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way. I'm talking about three cheeses blended together on that authentic Italian crust, the Gianmarco family recipe they use in the sauce there. This is good stuff, and it's a great offer. Two medium, two topping pizzas, $6.99 each. You can check that out at marcos.com. All right, it is time now, before we speak to Jeff Sintel, to go Around the Doghouse, brought today by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in Towns County, Georgia. And, you know, I mentioned a moment ago, maybe we heard some kind of candid remarks there from Kirby Smart in terms of how he views the game against Middle Tennessee State. I also thought we got a pretty candid remark from him yesterday on something that he thinks that Georgia's been missing thus far in the 2018 season. I think most fans would agree that there hasn't been much of a pass rush. Kirby Smart will talk to you about that why in a moment. And it's really the why part of this for me that ends up being kind of interesting as we go around the doghouse. That there is a trade-off in football. You know, you can't just have, you know, every single level turned up to, you know, 100. If you want to, you know, make a Madden player on the computer, you can obviously, you know, max that out at every single way. But for the, in real football, in real life, there's a trade-off. Being good at something means maybe being a little less good at something else. And it sounds like Kirby Smart has made a trade-off for Georgia that may just sort of, you know, create a little bit less of a pass rush. This is pretty candid from Kirby. Listen to him admitting that, you know what, a little more pass rush from Georgia probably wouldn't be a bad thing. Here's Kirby.
We're always looking to improve pass rush. I mean, I think you're never where you need to be, but that's one of the areas we want to improve. Two things have to happen in pass rush. You have to cover them long enough to rush them. You also have to stop the run to force them to pass the ball. We're a run-stop first team. It's what we pride ourselves on, which probably takes a little bit away from the pass rush, to be honest with you. So it's an area that I know since we've arrived, we've been pretty good on defense here, but if you'd say one thing, you'd say we've been insufficient in pass rush. Well, you don't get both worlds because you can be really good at pass rush and not real good at run defense. So we pride ourselves on that, but it's something we really work on.
I think that's really interesting from Kirby Smart there, and I think there's a trade-off when it comes to these kinds of things, as he spoke about. And the trade-off here ends up at times creating sort of some anxious moments for fans. I mean, think about Saturday against South Carolina here for a moment. You know, there is a moment there in that first half where Jake Bentley's having some success. You know, he's dinking and dunking and doing his stuff, and they're kind of moving down the field. And, you know, if you're a Georgia fan, you're thinking, why won't this defense do something about this? Why won't this defense step up and make a big play, wreak havoc in the backfield? And yet what Georgia's sort of defensive hallmark, its personality has been a bit more, is almost that sort of smothering style where, okay, it may work for a little while, but that sort of one-dimensional pass only, especially the sort of quick hitter passes that neutralize a pass rush and sort of, you know, try to neutralize the front seven, that stuff's not going to work for an entire game, especially if that's the only thing you bring to the table. We saw that against South Carolina last week. We saw it against Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl and probably, you know, countless other examples there in the 2017 season. But for some of the teams that Georgia's going to play the rest of the year, there is going to be a need to get into the backfield. There is going to be a need to get hands on quarterbacks and limit that. Maybe that's true next Saturday against Missouri. Maybe it's true later on in October against LSU, certainly against Jared Stidham in Auburn. And as Kirby Smart explains, the game against Middle Tennessee State could in some ways be a little bit of a dress rehearsal in that regard, the pass rush, with bigger games yet to come the rest of the season. Here's more from Kirby on the subject.
Well, I think it's really important on these guys not to give a quarterback a long time to sit back there because he's really good at it. They also, on the other hand, know that it's hard for them to block some of our guys every down in and down out, so they get rid of the ball quick. So you have to be careful about how many times you overdo the rush because they have an incredible screen game. The quarterback is a very good decision maker. He knows where he's going with the ball, and they have really good skill players to get the ball to.
I tweeted on Friday this really cool video of Will Muschamp breaking down Georgia's film against Austin Peay, and one of the things that Will sort of pointed out on that video was, at one point, an Austin Peay lineman sort of released to set up a screen, and DeAndre Walker just sort of stood there at the line of scrimmage, didn't go rushing in for the quarterback. It's an example of the poise and the polish that Georgia plays with. And, you know, unfortunately for a lot of the opposing teams that face Georgia, you know, those sort of gimmick-type offenses, quick hitter, quick-tempo stuff is the only thing they can do because Georgia's so well-coached in every other regard. May not be getting as much sacks right now as some Georgia fans want, but doing plenty to get the job done overall. The game against South Carolina is another piece of proof of that. It's Around the Doghouse here today on Tuesday. It's brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in Towns County, Georgia. And if you haven't checked out Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa there in Towns County, you're going to want to do that, especially for away game weekends. If you're not going to Athens for a game, you want to think about Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa there, especially coming up with the Missouri game on September the 22nd. Great, great time to sort of hang out, whether it be Brass Sports Bar and watch the game with some pool tables. They got the darts. They got the fire pit going there as well. You can check out the spa. It's just 2 hours away from Atlanta in Towns County, Georgia. It's also home to beautiful Lake Chautauqua. The golf there is fantastic. The spa there is top of the line. And if you keep listening here on a Dog Nation Daily, you can also hear some details coming up about how you can win a trip to a North Georgia's premier mountain resort and get out of the doghouse with your significant other, because this time of year, a lot of us are looking to do that. It is great to have you with us here today on a Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Jeff Sintel here for our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All every Tuesday on a Dog Nation Daily. And Jeff, I got some recruiting stuff I want to get to you with in a couple of minutes here, but I guess let me first of all say good morning. Thanks so much for being with us. And let me sort of start our conversation, if you don't mind, with kind of that freshman report that you've once again written for DogNation.com coming off the Georgia win against South Carolina. We'll kind of hit some of that because, obviously, Jeff, there were a lot of young players playing for the Dogs here this weekend.
Yeah, that was it's very interesting how I was able to – I kind of looked at all those numbers and gave it one of those really what we call deep dives and kind of saw which freshmen – had made the travel roster, which freshmen did not. Pretty good indication about who might be redshirting, even under the new rules of the redshirts. And also, got to look at what's happening with the 2017 class, as well with the travel roster at the same time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let me start with Cade Mays here, who, you know, listen, obviously Mays was a five-star player and one of the top recruits for Georgia's 2018 class. And yet I still don't think too much can be said about the luxury of Andrew Thomas goes down with the ankle injury. We obviously all hope that Thomas is going to be okay. But, man, there was a lot of pride and a lot of Georgia fans and Georgia coaches and Georgia players when you can slide Thomas out, slide Mays in, and things go as well as they did for Georgia on Saturday. You know the Mays family very well, Jeff. What was your personal reflection of having seen Mays, not his debut, he played in week one, but certainly in terms of significant football, it was kind of a debut for Cade Mays. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I think the main thing is, obviously, I thought Cade played well. He was the offensive freshman of the game for me. He was a featured photo in the freshman report. But just a little cold shower for everybody out there. I think that was the opportune time and opportune way for Georgia to get Cade Mays some big playing time on the road against the conference opponent. And what I mean by that is simply Cade Mays is an excellent run blocker. He can fire off the ball. That's what he can do very well, whether he's playing at guard or right tackle. I think it was a good fit for him in that game because Georgia did not ask him to make a bunch of back-to-back pass sets, convert a lot of third and eight, third and nines, where he had to really wall off Jake Fromm's blindside against an elite SEC pass rusher. I thought that was a very good way, maybe the perfect scenario for Cade Mays to get into the SEC, show folks what he can do, have some success, and build some confidence off of that.
For the next 2 weeks, you can stop by your local Marlowe's to see what your Marlowe's chef is cooking up with sweet grass dairy cheeses. That's right, local ingredients with the chef-inspired food there at Marlowe's Tavern. And Southern Living named Sweetgrass Dairy's original Little Moo one of the best Southern-made foods of 2016. It's unique cheeses because the cows are outside for 12 hours a day and are barn-free. So happy cows make for a really good-tasting cheese. You can check that out at the local Marlowe's Tavern near you. And by the way, if you haven't signed up for Marlowe's Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to Louisiana and the city of Baton Rouge coming up in October, make sure you go to DogNation.com and do that. All right, let me talk to you about another freshman that you also wrote about a little bit, at least, at DogNation.com this week, but maybe I'm hoping that in future freshman reports we hear more about, and that's Channing Tindall. Jeff, I don't have to tell you, I think you probably already agree with this, that one of the spots for Georgia on Saturday that I thought was sort of beneath championship level were those inside linebackers, especially, you know, being, you know, frozen on the RPO and having, you know, Bentley sort of dump over their head a bit there, you know, running that sideline to sideline stuff the way that obviously Roquan Smith was so great at that a year ago. It really seems like Channing Tindall's speed is something that inside linebacker core for Georgia is sort of missing out on right now. Now, that's a tough job for a freshman to step in and play early. I'm not surprised he's not quite ready to sort of fill that full role yet. But second half of the season, you get to LSU in October. By that point in time, do you think Channing Tindall's playing a bigger role on this team?
Well, you know, Brandon, I think that's probably one of the bigger races for a position group right now. You notice Georgia brought seven inside linebackers to Columbia, and that was even more than they took in outside linebacker column, which is about when they took six of those guys. I think it's going to be a very interesting race, one of the very interesting freshman races that I'll be looking at, is to see which one of those two elite recruits, whether it's Quay Walker or Channing Tindall or both, crack the 2 deep or get some major play in time outside of the special teams unit for the Bulldogs. And I know championship level, I think there's different ways to look at that. I think there's Roquan level, which is probably he's going to go down as the greatest inside linebacker and maybe one of the two or three greatest defensive players in the history of Georgia football already. I think then you start looking at maybe what's a national championship level and what maybe is an SEC championship level. And maybe those two terms are intertwined a little bit. But I think Natris Patrick gives Georgia something there. I think Monty Rice is also all over the ball. It looks like Georgia's got two sort of linebackers that play like Roquan did. And then they play or try to emulate the style of Roquan Smith. Perhaps that's a better way to say that. The Roquan Smith archetype. But then you have two other linebackers that kind of fit that big Alabama inside A-gap downhill bumper mold for Georgia as well. And you got names like Juwan Taylor in that mix. You got Monty Rice. You got Nick Fitzpatrick. Lots of guys there. But I think it is very interesting on the freshman side. If Channing Tindall and if Quay Walker start to flash, and it seems like every practice report, our guys Chip and Mike are talking about how Kirby is very hands-on with the inside linebackers. Because what he's doing right now is he's trying to build in September for what he will need in November.
Yeah, listen, I'm high on Quay Walker as well. Ken Blankenship also mentions him in our Facebook comment section. I think my issue here, Jeff, is what I feel like that group is missing right now. And I don't need you to win the Buckus Award. I just need you to be a little bit better than you were on Saturday. And, you know, from that standpoint, I think the thing that's really missing is the speed. When I think about Walker and Tindall, I just think about Tindall being the faster of the two here. And so that's why I mention him ahead of Quay Walker, not because ultimately I think he has a better Georgia career than Quay Walker does, but for what Georgia's missing right now, I just assume that Tindall's got more of that.
Well, I just think it's a microcosm of what folks are trying to do against Georgia. I thought it was very interesting how Carolina threw 31 passes in the first half. They had basically abandoned the run game. And then if you notice, a lot of those Jake Bentley passes as well. The really big gains came on some of that trickery where they're going to try and pull those inside linebackers and pull those young cornerbacks and young defensive backs. But the main thing for me is the way Georgia is attacking and when teams are attacking Georgia. And when you're talking about the inside linebacker spot, I think it's unique how everybody's trying to dink and dunk Georgia. If you look at all those Jake Bentley passes, they were really just going to try to attack the 5 to 7 yards down the field and then the perimeter on the edge with a lot of bubbles and stuff. That's a lot of different ways and a lot of foreign plays for a young high school linebacker like a Channing Tindall and a lot like a Quay Walker to get used to making in the SEC. Because they didn't really expect themselves to be challenged in that way this early in the game. But maybe that Brian McClendon's on to something. Maybe that's the way you have to attack Georgia. You got to take the high percentage stuff and hope somebody pops the tackle.
It is our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here on Tuesdays with Jeff Sintel on Dog Nation Daily. Don't forget, Dog Nation going to be at Marlowe's in Brookhaven next Thursday for our Dog Nation big game preview, looking ahead to that road test at Missouri for the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll do that next Thursday for starting at 6 p.m. That's our Dog Nation Marlowe's big game preview there at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. Hope you'll join us for that. Before I get to some recruiting talk, Jeff, there's a couple of notes I want to mention with you. Let me do one more freshman in the game from Saturday, and that's Tyson Campbell. Now, I said this leading into the game that I thought that Campbell would probably get beaten on a big play before the game was over with, and if it happened, I'd be fine with it. As it turns out, he got beaten twice for big plays, and even at the margin of victory for Georgia, had been a bit tighter than it was on Saturday, I still would have been fine with that. I do think it was a learning experience for him. I think freshmen need those, especially at the cornerback position. I think the Tyson Campbell's going to be better for it. He is clearly, I think right now, among the true freshmen, apologies to Jake Camarda, among the true freshmen, he's the guy that's sort of playing the most significant role. Cade Mays, I guess, will sort of join him in that regard for a bit here as well. And it was an uneven performance for Campbell on Saturday, but overall, I'm happy that he got the experience, even if it wasn't always the experience that maybe Campbell wanted it to be. How did you feel about Tyson Campbell kind of doing battle with some pretty good South Carolina defensive backs on Saturday?
I think it's just kind of the way you look at young teams. If they can go on the road and they can make mistakes, still come out with a victory, then that's a positive learning experience. And listen, I think the more times teams want to press Tyson Campbell, and let's face it, Brian Edwards was a solid SEC receiver last year. He was Carolina's leading guy last year, had about 700 yards, about 50 catches. So he was no slouch. But the more teams want to test Tyson Campbell, they're going to beat him. And the more times they do test Tyson Campbell, especially with DeAndre Baker over on the other side, making sure everybody remembers his name going forward, it's just going to make Tyson Campbell a lot better in the long run. And it seems pretty – it doesn't even seem like any sort of leap and bound here at all to see the more Tyson Campbell learns and the more he's tested in his freshman season, the more he will resemble the type of player that DeAndre Baker is now in his sophomore and his junior year. I mean, he's got all the length in the world, Brandon. He's got all the speed, and he's going to have Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker and probably two graduate assistants and one analyst in his ear at all times when he messes up. He's going to know what to do to be a really effective Bulldog for that defense.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, make sure you go to DogNation.com, sign up for your chance to win Marlowe's Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to Baton Rouge. You and a lucky guest could be on your way with us to New Orleans and Baton Rouge, one of the biggest games, the biggest parties of the season there. Later on in October, Marlowe's wants you to be the winner, so go to DogNation.com and sign up for your chance to do that. Michael Jamison in our Facebook comment section also says, are you guys going to talk about recruiting or what? So to satisfy Michael here, Jeff, let's talk a little bit of recruiting. And one of the things I asked you about, I think, on Before the Hedges last week and on Dog Nation Daily last week is, hey, let's think about some of these guys that sort of overlap with Georgia and South Carolina and Georgia's chances of maybe pulling one of them away. And one of the names that comes up for me in that regard is the five-star defensive lineman, Zach Pickens. With that in mind, given the fact that Pickens was there on Saturday, something that Pickens' mom recently tweeted out, I find to be really fascinating. If you're watching on video, let me show you this on the screen. It comes from Felicia Harris, who says, had the sweetest experience with Zach Pickens today. We were carted to the stadium. Thousands of fans chanting Zach. The love at USC is second to none. Win or lose, we are all gas, no breaks. Don't come to this post with the BS, by the way. We know what took place. We still, and I'm assuming that's a combination of emojis that means cocky. So that's Zach Pickens there, his mom, feeling the love from South Carolina, even on a day in which Georgia was a dominant winner. What do you make of that, Jeff, in terms of the impact that's going to have on Pickens?
Well, I think that's great for South Carolina. I mean, they did make it a football game for, I don't know, a handful of minutes on Saturday, and he's just their five-star. Congratulations. I mean, South Carolina has recruited an in-state five-star. They've done things the right way. They have mom on his. They have mom firmly in the golf court, in the golf cart. Let's say here, Zacchaeus Pickens is their marquee recruit. Brandon, he's only going to become the fifth five-star recruit this South Carolina program has ever signed. Should things continue trending the way they are, and mama seems very happy even after some rough treatment that the Gamecocks got at the hands of the SEC East rival Bulldogs. Plenty of defensive linemen in the city. It just seems like Carolina's gotten them a good one in Zacchaeus Pickens, who he seems duty bound and honor bound to honor his commitment and become a Gamecock.
Yes, so maybe a little bit of bad news there for Georgia fans who are hoping to sway Pickens. It sounds like right now the Pickens family is not going to be easily swayed. And then let me finish up with this, Jeff, if you don't mind, on our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Maybe a story that we got to start talking about a little bit more, both for the good and the bad. It's a little bit hard to tell yet where this one's going. But John Rhys Plumlee, Georgia's 2019 quarterback commit, has had a very interesting season thus far. First couple of weeks put up monster numbers. This past Friday, maybe not quite as much. A local reporter was on the scene. Once again, if you're watching on video, I can show you some of the numbers that Rhys Plumlee puts up here. Let me show you these stat lines. Stan Caldwell lets us know that for Rhys Plumlee, only 12 of 27 on the day. You don't love that ratio in terms of a completion percentage. No picks. Does throw for 230 yards and a touchdown pass. Also ran for 105 yards on 13 carries and scored a touchdown as well. That comes from Stan Caldwell, a reporter on the scene there. So I guess it was a pretty big game for Rice Plumlee on Friday night, Jeff. And maybe those numbers aren't quite as good as some of the other things that he had done a little earlier in the season. But this is a player that I had really never heard of before he committed to Georgia, and he has looked a lot more like a quarterback here during this upcoming season. How has your evaluation of John Rice Plumlee changed a bit, you know, given the fact that, you know, he's played a lot more football this year and played a lot better football than anything in the past? Is this an actual quarterback at Georgia here, or is this the kind of guy that's still destined to become the, quote, athlete once he gets on campus?
Oh, Brandon, he definitely won't be the athlete at Georgia. Everybody remembers, nothing against Matthew Downing, but I thought it was very, very interesting and eyebrow raising for me that Georgia brings a true freshman preferred walk-on quarterback to Columbia for the first SEC road test on the SEC travel roster. You only bring 70 dudes along with you right there, and no matter what, John Rice Plumlee is going to be a quarterback at Georgia just because of needs alone. Sure, he can run about a 4.5 in the 40, maybe sub-4.5s in the 40. He's going to put up some, you know, dazzling rushing highlights on Huddle. He already has. He will continue to do so. But I think there's something that James Coley likes to say on the practice field with his quarterbacks about you can't go broke making a profit. And that means taking the check down, taking the easy read, keeping the chains moving forward, don't risking the ball, protecting the right to punt, protecting the right to snap the ball and hand it off to a Georgia running back on the next play. Plumlee's made a lot of strides in that area for me because last year he threw 14 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. And when I asked him about it, when I talked to him over the summer, he was real. He said, you know, sometimes I just get a little too greedy. I try to fit balls in there where maybe I probably shouldn't, but I'm just trying to make a play for my team. And if you look at what he did over the course of the season, especially those first two games, Brandon, he already had 9 touchdowns against 0 interceptions, and his completion percentage was well over 75, hovering around 80%. So it looks like after that game against a strong opponent that he had a little bit of a hiccup or a little bit of regression, maybe more like what you were getting last year with John Rice Plumlee. But he's going to be a quarterback at Georgia. The reason he chose Georgia is Georgia didn't dabble into anything about slot receiver, safety, defensive back, athlete, anything like that. He loves to fit at Georgia for several reasons. And when he gets to Georgia, the way things stand right now, he's only going to be the 3rd scholarship quarterback on the roster. And he's going to give a different element for Georgia with those legs. So I think the quarterback question, he's definitely a quarterback for Georgia. And he's definitely a guy that you can see making a lot of those road trips in the future as a scholarship talent and a 4-star athlete at that as well.
So let me just put a punctuation mark on this with a fairly blunt question. So you think that Rice Plumlee is good enough to be a scholarship quarterback at Georgia then?
Oh, sure. I mean, you got to remember, Brandon, this is the interesting dynamic there you have with Fields and Fromm. Who exactly are you going to get to come chase those guys and follow those guys? I think it had to be the right guy that would want to come in to compete. Also, the right guy that knows he probably shouldn't be starting, no matter how confident he is, compared to Fields and Fromm in year one or even year two. And I think a quarterback hierarchy or a quarterback progression needs to take place between Fromm to Fields and then to the next guy at Georgia. And I think that's really what you look at with John Rice Plumlee. He's going to see a lot of things. I think it's a great opportunity for him because he has the legs and the wheels and the speed like Justin Fields. And then he has, he wanted to actually be a pure total quarterback as well like Jake Fromm. So I think the two guys he would compete with at Georgia would be a pretty good crucible and a really good learning environment for him to become the best player he can be under center.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. You know Jeff and I both love Marlowe's for chef-inspired food. And for the next couple of weeks, you can experience that yourself when you stop by and see what Marlowe's is cooking up with Sweetgrass Dairy cheeses. You know, Southern Living named Sweetgrass Dairy the one of the best Southern-made foods of 2016, and you can enjoy them yourselves when you go to your local Marlowe's Tavern and take advantage of that to a day. Jeff, I understand you and I are going to have a little lunch later on at Marlowe's Tavern, so I'm looking forward to that. I will see you then and see you back here on Dog Nation Daily. Again, very soon.
All right, guys. Have yourself a great week.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always fun with Jeff Sintel there on our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. It's great to have you with us here today. on a Dog Nation Daily as well. I want to hear more from Kirby Smart coming up in just a moment on a slightly different subject before we're done here today. Before that, though, let me get our SEC through. And, of course, when you're thinking about the SEC games this upcoming weekend, you're thinking about the fact that maybe you know more about a lot of this stuff than I do. And if you do, you want to put your money where your mouth is and be a winner. And the best way to do that is by playing where the pros play with my friends at MyBookie. And right now, MyBookie is even better than ever before because not only are they the home of the fast, no-hassle payout when you do win, but you can even get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar when you use the promo code DOGNATION. So simply find MyBookie online. That's MyBookie, MyBookie. Find them online. Use the promo code DOGNATION. You can get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar. Essentially, you're already a winner before your first bet is even placed, and then you can get going and show just how much you know about the game. You play, you win, you get paid. It's as simple as that. MyBookie, use the promo code DOGNATION. Get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar. All right, a few things to get to here around the world of the SEC, and one of our producers, Michael, mentioned this off the top of the show or before this show started. He thought this was kind of a fascinating storyline. I do as well, but maybe for a slightly different reason here. So Will Muschamp spoke to reporters again on Sunday after the game against Georgia on Saturday. It was like a sort of a one more time to sort of, you know, look back on everything that happened at the game. And one of the things that came up, and Jeff Sintel mentioned this a moment ago during our Marlowe's Tavern tell-off, that, boy, South Carolina really abandoned the run. Ineffective when they tried to run, and essentially offensive coordinator Brian McLennan just stopped doing that. Apparently, Will Muschamp, at least if you take this quote at face value, was not completely happy with the way that the game plan was called there. Here is what The State, which is the big media source there in Columbia, South Carolina, reports Will Muschamp is saying. Let me show you this on the screen here. Muschamp to The State says, "We needed to run the ball more to create more balance in what we're doing." Brian McClendon and I, that's the offensive coordinator, the former Georgia receiver and also assistant, Brian McClendon and I have talked about that. Now, Muschamp saying essentially that he told his offensive coordinator he didn't like the game plan. That's not exactly the kind of thing you hear head coaches say every single day. And for a guy like McClendon that's still very new in his college career here, that's a weird, you know, it's the kind of thing that almost feels a little bit like what Matt Canada, the old LSU offensive coordinator, and Ned Orgeron went through last year. Now, ultimately, that relationship became toxic. I would never suggest that McClendon and Muschamp's going to become the kind of same thing. But for the most part, a head coach publicly disputing the play calls of his offensive coordinator, it's just not the kind of thing you see very often. Now, my overall take from a football standpoint is, whether McClendon had tried to run the ball or not, they're not going to. McClendon was an offensive coordinator a year ago, and South Carolina still couldn't run against Georgia. That's a problem with that program. But it's also, I think, a reminder here as well that South Carolina, in terms of, you know, really being sort of a top-flight team, has still got a ways to go there, and maybe the head coach and the offensive coordinator not exactly on the same page with some of that. So that was the SEC opener for Georgia. Georgia played its next SEC game two Saturdays from now against Missouri. And ESPN recently sort of published some new data that makes this Missouri game look kind of interesting. You may be familiar with the FPI stuff. FPI is something we talk about from time to time here on Dog Nation Daily. It's an advanced metric that predicts outcome of games. As I've said before, I'm not good at math. I don't know how these things are tabulated, but I assume that they must be based on something. Otherwise, ESPN wouldn't publish it. If you're curious, Georgia has a 98.4% chance of winning on Saturday against Middle Tennessee State. 91.5% chance against Georgia Tech. Almost a 99% chance against UMass. But against Missouri next Saturday, just 77.3%. Now, that's still an overwhelming likelihood of winning, but it's not a sure thing in the way that, say, Kentucky is on the road, 88.4%. Florida is in Jacksonville, 85.5%. Tennessee in Athens, 95.6%. So at least according to ESPN, Georgia could have a little bit of a challenge at Missouri, just 77.3% chance of winning the game. Or, you know, conversely speaking, what about 23% chance of losing the game, almost a 1-in-4 chance. Ultimately, I don't think that's the way it's going to play out. I do think that Georgia wins. It's also worth pointing out that the preseason FPI data essentially said sort of the same thing, that ESPN, according to its FPI, has always viewed at Missouri as a tougher game for Georgia than at South Carolina. So maybe tuck that away in the corner of your mind a little bit here. It's still maybe a bit of a challenge for Georgia at Missouri here. And then one more final story for our SEC through. And if you're listening on the radio or the podcast, I apologize here. This is sort of a visual thing. maybe just this one day, if you can find us on video, check out the SEC through, you'll like this. There was a Kentucky player. Is it Cash Daniel? Is that the guy's name? So after Kentucky beats Florida on Saturday, and of course we can't stop talking about the Wildcats snapping a 31-year losing streak there to the Gators. Well, Daniel sort of, you all know I'm a pro wrestling fan. He gives you the sort of the classic Stone Cold Steve Austin celebration here. Let me show you this on a video for those of you who are watching. Cash Daniel sort of clashed the two water bottles together, drinking them simultaneously a la Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then he gives you the line of, that's the bottom line because Cash Money says so. I don't know a lot about Cash Money as a player, or Cash Daniel, I guess is his Christian name as a player. I don't know much about him, but he's now quickly becoming one of my favorite players. If that's the way that you celebrate a victory against the Florida Gators, a la Stone Cold Steve Austin, I got no problem with that. Really good stuff there from Kentucky in the victory against Florida on Saturday. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I want to make kind of a weird point just for a moment. Y'all know I'm not the world's biggest NFL fan. I've said that before, but I do watch a lot of the games. I was watching Monday Night Football last night. Didn't see the entire game between the Jets and the Lions, but apparently it's a disaster for Detroit and its new coach, Matt Patricia, who's the former New England Patriots defensive coordinator. So much so that an ESPN writer wrote a headline that sort of got my attention. Once again on video, I'll show you the headline here from the writer on ESPN.com. Michael Rothstein's his name. The headline, Matt Patricia's debut as Lions head coach, as bad as it gets. That's a pretty provocative thing for a writer to say about a guy coaching in his first NFL game. I'm going to assume it was pretty bad then for Patricia. And it sort of continues a trend, assuming this is what it ends up being for Patricia here, the former Belichick assistant, of a lot of former Belichick guys just not being very good as head coaches. Romeo Crennel, the former defensive coordinator, he didn't have a very distinguished career. On the offensive side of the ball, you know, Josh McDaniel wasn't great in Denver. I heard on the radio this morning that of all former Belichick assistants who've now become NFL head coaches, the only one to ever have a winning record, believe it or not, was Al Groh, who for like 1 year was the Jets coach and went 9-7. He's the only former Belichick assistant to, at least according to what I heard today, to have a winning record in the NFL after leaving Belichick. So what does that have to do with Georgia football? Well, for me, it's simply this. You know, it would almost seem to be a sure thing to leave Bill Belichick's side, go to the NFL, and just sort of have it all click for you, and you sort of duplicate Belichick's success in a new program. But as Matt Patricia may be showing, and as old Belichick assistants have shown as well, it just isn't that easy. A success is not typically that easy to predict. And the same thing's true for college football as well. Because the narrative that seems to be forming with Kirby Smart right now is, well, obviously, he's great. He worked with Nick Saban. He learned everything that Nick Saban learned. And now he's just simply copying at Georgia everything that worked for Nick Saban at Alabama. But, folks, it's not that simple in college football either, because there are a lot of former Saban assistants who haven't had the same level of success that Kirby Smart's enjoying at Georgia. I mean, Will Muschamp's an example of that. Jeremy Pruitt might soon be an example of that. On the offensive side of the ball as well, guys like Jim McElwain, not exactly perfect in his stints as head coaches here. Kirby Smart is making something look incredibly easy that's not quite as actual easy as Smart makes it look. And frankly, I think that we should remember that to give Smart credit for building George as quickly as he has, because this was not a foregone conclusion. This is a path that he had to sort of navigate for himself, and he's navigating it well. Now, for what it's worth, Kirby Smart, sometimes with his own words here, sort of downplays his own role in that success. Recently, he said that a lot of this is really just sort of comes down to the talent you have, and the coaching part may not be all that important. Here is how Smart recently said this.
I learned a long time ago, when you take a job, you need to have proximity to players, and you need to be able to have better players, because the coaching part can be overrated.
So listen, you know, so maybe his own words there are in dispute of kind of what I'm saying here. But nonetheless, I think the point is still taken. Yes, you got to have a program like Georgia that's close to a lot of elite high school football talent, and a program like Georgia that has a lot of resources that can sort of, in some respects, recruit itself. But listen, Kirby Smart's lit a fire at Georgia that was not lit before he got here. And just because you were a great assistant for a great football coach before you became a head coach doesn't guarantee success. We see lots of examples of that in the NFL with guys that used to work with Bill Belichick who don't exactly look like Bill Belichick once they get to their new job. With Nick Saban and, you know, a lot of guys that worked with Urban Meyer too. Look at Tom Herman at Texas, for instance. That's not exactly a duplication of the Urban Meyer success formula. It's just not easy. There's nothing that can be predicted. Kirby Smart is quickly becoming his own man, and he seems to be building something pretty special here at Georgia. And frankly, it's not quite as easy as Kirby Smart's making it look. All right, we will get ready to wrap up here today. Good to have you with us. Of course, it was fun a moment ago to be able to talk about that Kentucky victory against Florida. And Cash Daniel now, for those of you watching on video, I guess he'll become one of our mascots here for the Gatorator Countdown. Our buddy Eddie here says, hold on now, Cash. I like the Stone Cold Celebration, but don't go stealing my shtick here. The Gatorator Countdown still belongs to Eddie, and we'll let Eddie have his piece on that. And, of course, 46 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, beats Florida again. Even the FPI data says so. FPI gives Georgia at ESPN an 85.5% chance of winning that game. We think it's 100%. We think it's going to happen 46 days from right now. We're looking forward to it. I'll also tell you that tomorrow's a fun day around Dog Nation. It's Before the Hedges, a little recruiting talk presented by Kroger. Go to DogNation.com as well. Sign up for our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway courtesy of Marlowe's, and then we'll see you right here. Another episode of Dog Nation Daily tomorrow. You'll have a great day. And on video, I do have